Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
And even though NBC has officially announced its Sunday Night Football broadcast team of Mike Tirico, Chris Collinsworth, and Melissa Stark, a member of our broadcast team every Tuesday, we're proud to say, is Neil Kulong. So welcome.
Oh, it's great to be here as always, and I am, as always, appreciative of being put into that group of fine media personalities.
And, well, you should be, sir. All right. There are 2,792 mock drafts, give or take 1,000. You and I both know they're all junk, but of the ones that are out there, what do you think? I mean, I'll ask you this again next week. As of today, where do the Steelers go?
I would say this, and it's not so much based on a mock draft, and that in and of itself sort of creates the line of demarcation between a mock draft and a team strategy. But based on the team's needs, immediately 2 years, 3 years down the line, the shining light on the Steelers right now, and I'm surprised this doesn't get talked about more, is the fact that they lost two receivers this offseason, and they don't really have much that we saw coming back in terms of depth. Okay, if it was 1989, if you have one good receiver, you're a leg up on a lot of the competition in the league. You need at least three of them to play a lot now. Yep. And the Steelers have one and a half, I would say. The half one fell apart last season, didn't look at all to match what he had shown his rookie season, which was okay, not great. I'm not sure if Chase Claypool is rededicating himself to his craft and his game, but he's going to need to. Even with Claypool coming back in a much better level than he was in 2021, they need a receiver that can play now. Now, I say this knowing free agency isn't over yet by any stretch. There are all these veterans out there. The Steelers tend to be a team that want to bring in a veteran to handle that, you know, fifth role with some special teams contributions if they have the right player for that available in the market somewhere. But they absolutely need a young receiver. And I don't think there's a way in the world they're getting out of the first two rounds of this draft without one. So for me, for my money, I would say the leader at the clubhouse would be receiver. But here's what you get into. Is the player who's available, and I'll preface this by saying, is the non-quarterback player available at 20 worth the 20th overall pick? Now, you know the Steve Jones rule. There are two drafts. There's a regular player draft, and there's a quarterback draft.
That's true.
So let's take the quarterbacks out of the equation. If we're just looking at the context of other positions, it is without question wide receiver. That's the biggest need for the Steelers. Will there be a player there that's worth them taking at 20? Because also, wide receiver is kind of a position they don't really take in the first round very often. And considering how many receivers you need, and considering the success that the Steelers have had identifying workable, at least, workable talent from all over the draft, with the exception of the first round, you think they're pretty confident in their ability to spot depth, to find the kinds of guys that they can build into the types of receivers that they want. But this is a completely different thing now. You don't have Ben Roethlisberger with an arm anymore, and you haven't had that for a couple of years, but you don't have his insight. You don't have his game savvy anymore. You have a new offense, essentially, from the days of you know, plucking Antonio Brown and making him an all-world player from the sixth round, getting good run out of a Juju Smith-Schuster, a second-round pick, getting, you know, you're in the process of transitioning to Deontay Johnson, getting 170 targets a year at 11 yards a route, something like that. You don't have a real dynamic, high-level athlete among their receivers. And to me, that's a first-round guy. You need to be able to find that, because you're going to have to take some heat off of Deontay Johnson, a player that I like. I think Johnson's good. He's not an elite guy. You need to get somebody opposite Johnson to bring out the best of him on a per-catch basis. there's too many volume producers on the Steelers right now. Najee Harris is a volume running back. Mm-hmm. Deontay Johnson is a volume receiver. You need a guy that can break somebody's back on one play, and they don't really have that. So to me, that's the direction that I would go, but it's really going to depend on who's there. And that when you're drafting at 20, you know, you're doing that a lot, but you have to hope the right set of circumstances comes up that drops the elite guy down to a point where you can take him. But if there's a position that we've seen lately that it seems to be more susceptible to that, it's receiver for sure. There have been some great receivers taken after 19 in the last couple drafts. I mean, Justin Jefferson, I was floored at why he went as late as he did. And he was a part of, and Chase Claypool was in this draft too, but he was a part of a historically deep receiver group. But you watch that kid play, it's just like, wow. I mean, he's a 100-target guy as a rookie. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I tell you, Vikings took him at, what, 21? I'll take him at 21 all day.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a no-brainer. Chris Olave out of Ohio State, I think, is like that. I think he's at that level. I'm not sure he's going to make it to 20, but I could see why you wouldn't take him in the top 10.
Dotson's like that. I can tell you firsthand, Dotson's like that.
There are guys there, and I really think the Steelers are I don't want to say sleight of hand with all the quarterback play. I think it's going to depend on the quarterback who might be available at 20. But I really think they need a receiver above anything else in round one.
As you and I have talked several times when it comes to the quarterbacks, neither one of us knows which one's any good. I mean, when I mean that, I mean in a relative sense of translating to the next level. I can't tell. I don't know if you can.
Well, you're acting as if there's an answer to that. That's the thing. It's not a question. If somebody could tell, this wouldn't be a problem. You wouldn't have 75% of them taken in the top 40 be out of the league in 5 years. You don't know. And the reality is that this is something we touched on this a little bit last week. In the older that I get, the harder it is to really see these guys as the kids that they are. Now, let's put them at age 21. They're playing the most complex and most important position in all of sports. They're getting paid millions upon millions of dollars, and they are, whether they're able to do it or not, they are the face of that franchise.
Yeah.
So they're being trained as CEOs along with great downfield passers and game managers. You have to do all that at age 21. Now add in the fame, add in the pressure, add in the money, a much higher level of coaching, a necessity of 24/7, 365 nutritional and strength training. Put all of that in. The 21-year-old coming from Alabama is the one that says Alabama is just like the pros. You never hear the 25-year-old who's been in the pros for 4 years saying that.
No.
There's a reason. There's a lot of things that change, okay? You simply cannot project with, for the most part, a high degree of tangibility how well somebody is going to adapt to that. Plus, look at the difference in society between a 21-year-old and a 25-year-old.
Yeah.
After the 25-year-old has had 4 years of professional experience, they are a profoundly different person.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably 600 million times as intense for a quarterback. So to act as if we can accurately project that, I think, is nonsense. Unless you're Trevor Lawrence, who has everything. I mean, I don't think they come more pro ready than Trevor Lawrence.
Right.
That's a complete fluke. Complete fluke.
Right.
There are far more Baker Mayfields, which I am not saying his career is over, but I don't think it's quite progressing the way that the Cleveland Browns thought that it would. You don't know what's going to happen in any way, shape, or form. And I didn't even bring up just the simple concept of injuries. That can derail a career very early and very easily. So I don't want to say it's a gut feel. I don't want to say it's anything. I think it very simply is you draw one from the deck and you make it work, or you don't. It's one or the other. I don't think either way, their success or their failure is going to depend on what happens after they're drafted. It has nothing to do with the pick itself. I think it has far less to do with, I don't want to say where they are, but the guy that they're drafting is not going to be the guy that they have in their locker room in a year. They're just not. There's too much that changes. There's too much that happens. They can't expect him to be the same. So they have to project how he's going to grow. And nobody knows that. So you kind of hope for the best. You want to put him in the best position possible. But for me, it comes down to how quick. really, you need arm strength. You need accuracy. You can see that whether he has the tools to do those things. And right. You can see the mechanics that he's working with. Okay, so you can project that to some degree. Does he seem mature? Does he seem like he can handle stress, handle pressure? You have to look at that. Your mental growth, is he mature? Can he rise to this? Is he going to grow along a normal path? Will the money change him? Does he have the right people around him to help foster that and help keep him focused on the game? Or at the root of it all, does he absolutely love, eat, breathe, sleep football? That, to me, that's probably the number one question, because you can't do much with a guy at the quarterback position who isn't in love with it. You can get away with that.
Sure.
An elite athlete that doesn't really care a whole lot about football, you're okay with him for 5-6 years. Once his body starts to break down, he really has to keep up on those things at a much more diligent level than just going out and playing. He probably doesn't make the grade all that much anymore. But for the quarterback, they've got to be constantly improving. They've got to be constantly evaluating. And that takes a lot. And that's why there are so few of them that are dominant year to year. But not coincidentally, if you don't have that at your quarterback position, you don't have very good odds of being consistently good. And you have to move mountains over a 3-year period without a good quarterback in order to win in the NFL. If you want to win in those 3 seasons, give yourself a chance to win a Super Bowl, you have to have a quarterback that plays really well. And if you have to change that out 2 of those 3 years, odds are you're not going to be very competitive in 2 of the 3, if not all 3.
See, well, that's how I've always admired about you. You've never let the money go to your head.
Yeah, exactly. That's one thing I am grateful today to be able to say. My financial windfalls of talking about football have not affected me.
It's interesting. You know, we talk about mock drafts. There's never been a draft since it began in 1936 with the pick of Jay Berwanger by the Philadelphia Eagles. That you've had a draft where in the first 10 picks, somebody whose job is to touch the football for a living has always been in the first 10. Yet this might be the one that opens the door where the first 10 picks, none of them are guys that touch the ball for a living. Quarterback, running back, no, it won't be running backs, and wide receivers or tight ends. I find that as a possibility that's interesting.
Kind of a red flag, isn't it? I'd worry about that if I was a team. I ranted last year in this segment, and I heard it from Bengals fans up and down leading into the draft. All the talk was
Penny Sewell, Penny Sewell,
we need
Penny Sewell, Penny Sewell.
We need Penny Sewell. Our protection is terrible. We need Penny Sewell. A quarterback got hurt because our protection is terrible. We need Penny Sewell. Well, first off,
what pick did you and I rave about the next day? Jamar Chase. That's right.
And look what happened.
You and I both said, that's an awesome pick. The heck with Penny Sewell.
It was the best pick of the draft. I mean, he should have gone higher than that. Because the guy, and you saw it as a rookie, he's making man plays 6 games into his career. And the guy's going to be an all-pro player for 5 or 6 seasons.
I mean, you and I raved about that pick on that Friday, because we had you on that Friday. And we were like, what a pick.
I hated it and loved it, because, wow, the Bengals are doing the right thing here. And
the Bengals are not doing Bengals things. That's darn it.
Why? Because you need to get the ball down the field in this game. And you need to have the threat to do that.
Yep.
Protection, let me just dispel this myth. Protection obviously is important. Protection is a unit. Okay, it's not one guy. Left tackle does not do anything if they just slide, the rush over the other way. If he's Anthony Munoz reincarnate and he can take 2 guys at once, they're just going to put everybody else on the opposite side. So you need 2 of them then, by that definition. You're not getting 2 of those kinds of players. You need to find a way to make 5 guys play as a unit as if they're all that talented, even though they're not.
Which
and
now
a huge part of that is your quarterback. So. Yeah. We get into that. The guy that has the ball has the control. Joe Burrow, to be honest with you, I've ripped Burrow in this as well from the leading into the playoffs and during the playoffs. Burrow didn't play particularly well. I don't care who he is. I don't care how allegedly likable he is. He did not play well. Okay, their defense got them where they ended up.
He didn't play well in the Super Bowl either, contrary to popular belief. He really didn't. The one tip ball was it T. Higgins, where he almost ripped
brutal offensive pass interference. It wasn't called. That was the 80-yard play.
On Ramsey,
that was pretty much all he did.
Right.
He was beaten pretty handily by the veteran quarterback on the field.
The Bengals defense played
phenomenally well.
That was John Unitas to John Mackey, tipped by Mel Renfro, right?
Except
with the penalty.
Yes, exactly. So you put all of that together. The point is, protection is good. I just, in today's NFL, I'm not drafting a left tackle at 5 overall when there is a superstar wide receiver on the board. I'm just not doing it. I'll find a left tackle that can play. Okay.
Which then brings me full circle back to where we started. I think that goes exact in a draft that has a depth of talented receivers. You got to get one of them. You got to.
In a league that requires talented receivers, and the best you've got right now is Deontay Johnson, you need to add some. I'm not trying to disrespect Deontay Johnson. He blocked me on Twitter for some reason. It's nothing against him. It's that he is a 1B level receiver. He's not an elite guy. He did well with 170 targets, but let's be honest, he got 170 targets because the quarterback couldn't throw down the field, and he doesn't get open down the field all that particularly well. He's not a burner. He's a great route runner. He's an underneath guy, though. He's an 11-yard a target guy.
It's C&C, okay? It's confidence and consistency. He's got the first, the confidence, but he doesn't have the latter, the consistency.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think I'm choosing my words carefully here because criticizing Deontay Johnson is not a popular thing in among the Steelers Twitterverse right now. Deontay Johnson is a great route runner. He runs with great balance, and he creates separation after his breaks at a high level. You know, he looks good in doing that. But that type of receiver is a guy that gets open underneath. He's not burning you on a post. He's not beating you on a fly down the field. He's not getting you chunk plays. They'll get you first downs, and I'm by no means suggesting he should be getting the ball less or anything like that. He's an effective player. They should pay him. They should keep him. I think he's good.
Yes.
But they need a dude, and Johnson is just not that. He's not a high-level receiver. And in the NFL today, if you don't have one, you're probably not a very good team. It's just the way the game is.
Can I give you a quick comparison? You know who I think he is? Right. And by the way, the player I'm about to say I think was really, really good. He's Alvin Harper. Right? A tremendous number two that when he then in free agency went to be the number one with Washington is not a number one.
Was it Washington? He went to Tampa Bay, didn't he?
One of them. I thought it was Washington.
Yeah, somebody paid him a lot and he didn't do anything because he's kind of a one-trick pony.
He's a two. He's a one. Yeah, he's a 1B. That's my point. He's a 1B, okay? And he's not a 1A. And he was signed to be a 1A.
I take great pains to not mix fantasy football terminology with the actual game. They don't have there's no distinction of a number one receiver. That's something we create. But that context, yes. But he got 170 targets last season. If you want to define what a number one receiver is, I think them making a priority to get the ball to the guy has got to be pretty high on that list. So he has that. He has the ability to get open underneath. He can go in all cardinal directions in order to catch the ball, but he cannot go. He is not going to consistently beat you over the top. He doesn't require double coverage. You really can't double cover him because he's not far enough down the field. What they need, though, is Johnson to be able to run underneath stuff and be able to put a guy over the top of him, have a high-low look, and force your safeties into conflict. That's what they need. And they don't have you would have thought Chase Claypool could do. I don't know what Chase Claypool is doing, but he's probably doing it while lying on the field.
No.
He's not the game breaker that you think that he would be, and there are a variety of reasons for that, and we don't have enough time to get into it. It's a big offseason for him, and I hope that he's working, but I don't. There's not a way in the world the Steelers can count on him. You know, 2 years left on his deal. They just can't count on him. They need to get another guy and let Claypool compete, figure out who he wants to be as a player. They need to get another guy in there, plain and simple. And it can't be a third-round MAC receiver. They need to get a dude. And I that's the direction that I would go I'm not against a quarterback, but honestly, if it's not one of those two positions, I don't know what they're doing.
We're both right. He signed with Tampa Bay, and then he signed with Washington.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Washington's kind of ended up a graveyard for all of those players back in those days. Nobody mismanaged free agency with more appeal and zest than the Washington franchise did back in the early to mid-90s.
And to their credit, still mismanaging other elements today. All right, so we will be
a tradition that won't die.
A tradition unlike any other. All right.
I was looking for that. I missed it.
My friend. Full bore on the draft next week. Look forward to it. Thanks so much, as always.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.